Hello. And a warm, warm welcome to another episode of the What's Going On podcast. We're sitting here in our fantastic studio in Signalfabriken, Sundbyberg. I'm here with Chua. How you doing, my man?
Good as hell. Been a great couple of weeks, honestly. A lot of things are coming together.
Yeah, not only in podcast, it's also in life.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to move this weekend. The spring is coming. And also so many interesting podcast episodes that we're going to record.
Yeah, a lot of exciting stuff lined up.
Yeah, so it's gonna a lot of guests.
Quite a few guests.
Exciting things will come from this podcast. If you don't follow and subscribe to our podcast, please do, because there'll be so many interesting episodes upcoming here. So make sure to hit that follow button, because you don't want to snooze on these episodes. And while we're talking about exciting stuff about the podcast, we have to start off with the biggest game in the football world, basically. The biggest game in Spain also, El Clásico. It was Barcelona playing on Nou Camp, and they won over Real Madrid. And the game ended 2-1 to Barcelona. What are your thoughts on like the game?
Feels like with that game, Barca have surely wrapped up the title. 12 points ahead now, with 12 games to go. It's difficult to see how Real Madrid would come back from that. But the game itself, it shows how small the margins are in football.
Definitely.
You know, it was 1-1 with about 10 minutes left. Asensio scores a goal.
Ruled out.
Ruled for offside. Marginal.
VAR, right?
Yeah, with VAR. Would have been 6 points difference.
Yeah.
Real Madrid keep going for it, you know, push for a winner, cut it down to 6 points, and then Barca score right at the end. Kessié win it 2-1, and now 12 points ahead of Real Madrid.
It's crazy when these top teams, when they are so close, so many tight games, and it's only like a few actions that actually will decide a season.
Yeah, margins are tiny in football. It's insane.
Yeah, definitely. But I agree with you there, that it felt like Barca wrapped up the
Liga. Yeah, it did. And you wouldn't expect it to be Sergio Roberto and Kessié who scored the key goals.
Exactly. And also that Real didn't score one by themselves. It was actually Araujo with an unlucky own goal. I don't think that people that actually put a bet on the goal scorers, I think the person that won with these will be rich today.
10,000 times the money or something.
Yeah, exactly. It was such a crazy goal scorers.
Yeah, three
goals. But yeah, it feels quite crazy that Barcelona has been surpassing Real Madrid in La Liga.
Yeah, you wouldn't have expected that.
No, exactly. Definitely not. A year ago when Real Madrid were on top, they won the Champions League.
La Liga, comfortably.
They won La Liga, exactly, without a shadow of a doubt that they would win. And, you know, Barca have been having all these transfers. They have been rebuilding the squad. You know, Xavi, I'm really impressed with how he performed so far.
Xavi's doing a great job. On the field, things are looking good, at least in La Liga. I mean, they've had struggles in Europe this season.
Yeah.
But in La Liga, it's been solid. I mean, barely conceding any goals.
And I felt like it was a bit of nepotism, you know, with Xavi getting appointed as the Barcelona manager. It felt like, you know, with nostalgic way of doing it.
And it is. Like, it is. Still is. But it seems like it's at least working out.
Yeah. I think that Xavi has shown that he's like the real deal.
They do play good football.
Yeah. He knows how to play the game as a baller. We know that. But I also think that he has shown that he's also a great coach.
Yeah.
But, you know, with all these transfers, they've been looking quite all right on the pitch. There's been quite a few controversies going around outside of the pitch, right? Can you brief us a little bit about the Negreira scandal? Can you give us a bit of context?
As most of you probably know, there's been a scandal after scandal at Barca the last couple of seasons. But this one is inarguably the biggest scandal ever in Spanish football, and it's created massive animosity towards Barca from every fan base in Spain now and probably for a long time coming. But basically, what happened? On March 10th, Barca were charged with corruption over payments made to former vice president of Spanish football's refereeing committee, José María Enríquez Negreira. Negreira has received 7.3 million euros from Barca between 2001 and 2018. This has been paid to his company, obviously not directed to him, but companies that he owns. Both Barcelona and him deny any wrongdoing. Basically, what happened was Barca, they were charged with the crime of continued corruption in business. This was a Spanish law that was established in 2010. And since 2015, it's included a specific section targeting corruption in sport when it's suspected an attempt has been made to predetermine or alter in deliberate and fraudulent manner the result of a match or competition.
Okay, so this is basically like a law that wants to prevent
corruption in football.
Corruption to happen in football.
In sport overall.
In general, yeah.
They also talk about the continued. This obviously means it's taking place over a longer period of time rather than a one-off.
17 years or something.
Yeah, like exactly. And this means potential punishments are bigger and can include up to 4 years in prison for individuals or even professional disqualifications and fines for groups or entities.
So they could go down to like Joel's League or something.
On that, actually, the thing in La Liga is that these type of things are time-barred, meaning La Liga can do no sporting punishments to Barcelona from their side, as they're not allowed to investigate cases that relate to events that took place over 3 years ago.
Okay.
So they can't actually punish them in any sporting manner. These payments, they stopped in 2018. And for some reason, the La Liga rulebook time bears these kind of breaches. But the thing, UEFA do have powers to bring sanctions. And UEFA are, of course, investigating this, as UEFA don't time bear these type of offenses. But basically what the prosecutor said was that FC Barcelona reached and maintained a strictly confidential verbal agreement with Enríquez Negreira, so that in his capacity as vice president of the CTA, which is the Spanish Football Referees Committee, and in exchange for money, he would carry out actions tending to favor Barcelona in the decision-making of referees in the matches played by the club.
Okay.
That's what the prosecutor accused them of.
All right.
Pretty serious accusations. Pretty mad, actually.
Yeah.
A bit more context to this. Negreira, he was investigated by Spanish tax authorities because he wasn't able to explain where that money was coming from and what it was for. So when he spoke to Cadena Ser, which is a media outlet, in mid-February, when the news first broke, he said that there's no documentation of his work because it was always conducted verbally. But he said that it included giving advice on how players should behave with different referees.
Oh, okay. So he claims that it's some kind of like consulting thing.
Yeah, exactly.
To coach Barca's player to behave well with referees.
And also like, okay, this referee, this is how he is. This is how you should be around him.
Okay.
One of the craziest comments actually that came from Negreira's testimony to the Spanish authorities, which was reported in Spanish media, was when he said that Barcelona paid him to, quote, make sure no refereeing decisions were made against them, which is to say for everything to be neutral.
What? Did he actually say this?
Yeah, that's what he said to the Spanish authorities.
No.
Yeah.
Is this guy stupid or what? He's basically like saying that this is corruption. He's like admitting.
Nah, he is. And the funny thing is that the assistant of Tata Martino, who was a manager from 2013 to 14, he said he never saw any reports about referees. And also Ernesto Valverde, who was a manager from 2017 to 2020, he said he never saw anything either. And also people around Pep said they also never saw any of these reports. And Negreira, he actually also sent a note to Barca after they stopped the payments in 2018. And he demanded Barca pay him 200,000 euros in outstanding sums. And he also invited Barca's president to reflect, noting that a scandal would not be good for the club and threatening to reveal all the irregularities that he saw. So it's basically blackmail.
Yeah, it's blackmail. But he's also like saying that he also did things wrong.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
He's more saying, if you guys don't pay me, then I'm going to reveal all these irregularities that have been going on. So
I've been involved in.
Yeah, that I've been involved in.
Yeah, basically. So he's admitting and also blackmailing.
He was obviously clearly unhappy that Barca stopped paying him.
Yeah. I can understand that. What did you say? 7.3 million.
Yeah, euros. That 17-year period. And then they stopped in 2018.
Quite a good salary.
Yeah, not too bad.
I wouldn't be unhappy with that salary for a few years.
Yeah, that's mad. And then, of course, like Barca's president has been denying all these type of wrongdoing.
Right?
Yeah, Laporta.
Yeah.
He said, quote, recently, there are ferocious attacks towards us to put dirt on a public image that are far away from the reality. I'm not getting emotional as a sign of weakness. I'm emotional because I can't wait to face all those scoundrels that are tarnishing the badge of our club. Very emotional, very defensive.
Very like everyone's trying to destroy Barcelona.
Very populist almost.
Yeah. We talked about it actually before the podcast. It felt like a Donald Trump way of putting it.
Always a witch hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of describing and explaining, okay, why did this scandal come up? Instead, it'd be like, everyone is accusing us for something. They're wrong and they're bastards. It feels like the thing you do if you're guilty, in my opinion.
No question about that.
Yeah.
And actually, Real Madrid also participating in this legal action against Barcelona.
Okay.
And at the Camp Nou on Sunday,
there
were no Real Madrid directors in attendance. They're always at the games. Like in Spain, it's actually a custom in La Liga games for the boards to have lunch before the games.
Oh yeah, they do something similar in Italy.
They do?
Yeah.
So that's common. That didn't happen here. And also Madrid, I think last week they had an emergency board meeting after the charges were announced. And this is where they decided that they would participate in the legal action against Barcelona.
So they're basically showing what they think about it.
Yeah.
And they're making a statement here.
Exactly.
Real Madrid is definitely doing the right thing. Also, that they are showing that what Barca is doing is not okay.
Yeah, for sure. At all. You can't be paying refs.
No. Feels like Barcelona, they put themselves in a really bad position here. It'll be hard for them to talk themselves out of it.
Yeah, it's messy. It's messy.
Yeah.
Not Lionel in this case.
Nah, exactly. Now we talk about paying referees, but it's also been, you know, they've been buying a crazy amount of player for a crazy amount of money during the last summer. And I felt like every day in the papers I read about their financial struggles and their financial problems and everything. So I think we should dive in a bit to that too.
Let's do it.
How one of the biggest clubs in the world became so ruined financially.
They're having crazy financial issues. Basically, at the beginning of the season, when they set their budget, they counted on reaching the quarterfinals at least of the Champions League. But then they were knocked out of the group, which left them with a 20 million euro shortfall in expected revenue. So then they set a new target, reach the Europa League final. That would bring roughly the same amount of money.
Okay.
But then United knocked them out.
True.
Happy about that. But that meant Barca only earned 500,000 euros from the Europa League rather than the 20 million they were hoping by reaching the final.
Damn. None of the plans there became reality.
They've been poor in European competition. But the main issue is like when it comes to salary limits. So in February, La Liga, they announced their latest round of salary limits that clubs must meet, calculated based on the club's revenue and their operating costs. And despite Piqué retiring and Depay being sold to Atletico, the amount that they're like allowed to spend decreased from 656 million to 648 million. So it's not that big a decrease. But the thing is, this is expected to decrease a lot next season. According to The Athletic, club sources at Barcelona predict that next season they'll be able to spend between 450 million to 500 million on wages. So that's like almost a 200 million euro decrease. And that's why Javier Tebas, you know, the president of La Liga, keeps saying that Barcelona need to lower their expenditure by 200 million.
Okay, so then they have to sell a few big players in order to fit in the new salary budget.
That's the thing. They're going to have to take drastic measures. Last season, they relied on the levers. You probably heard in the summer of these like palancas.
Yeah.
They pulled like the third lever, the fourth lever, and so on.
Yeah, exactly. They like decreased their amount of money that they would get from TV.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Last season, they were in a similar position. They were 144 million euros above the salary limit. So they had two options. They could either lower their wage bill or quickly increase their revenues.
Okay.
And they chose the latter option, which was selling club assets. And this became known as levers, like I said, palancas.
Oh, yeah. True.
There were a ton of levers last season that they pulled, but this included selling 25% of the TV rights for the next 25 years.
Yeah, that was what I read about. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy. 25% of TV rights, 25 years, and also 49% of Barca Studios, which is like their multimedia arm.
Yeah.
So essentially, they're sacrificing long-term revenue streams for immediate success, for immediate uncertain success, you know, they're hoping.
Yeah. That's really strange. It's such a like terrible decision do that, because everything can go down.
They're so dependent on success this season, exactly. Which is why it's so important for them to win La Liga as well.
Yeah.
But I mean,
wow, that's crazy.
Crazy some of the decisions that are being made by the Barcelona board.
Yeah, it's really poor.
It's mad. But like as a result of that last season, I mean, they raised 737 million euros and that solved the problem. They were even able to spend, as you said, 140 million on players like Rafinha, Lewandowski, Koundé, signed for quite a few players on a free transfer as well.
Oh, yeah, Kessié too.
Kessié, Andreas Christensen, a few players.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in December, La Liga, they changed the rules so that pulling any levers isn't an attractive option anymore. Basically announced that any sale of club assets wouldn't impact salary limits.
Okay, so they won't be able to do this.
Yeah, they won't be able to do that.
Like Chelsea did with these like longer contracts.
Yeah.
They can't do that. I think La Liga saw the same thing as Premier League did.
Yeah.
That they saw a loophole in the system and they then like, decided to...
fix that loophole.
Yeah, exactly, to fix that loophole instead. Smart of La Liga too.
Yeah, it is. But it creates a lot of tension between Juan Laporta and Javier Tebas.
Understandable. I'm on La Liga side here.
Yeah, me too. Clubs shouldn't be paying refs and they have to meet the salary limit. But basically means Barca have to increase revenue, you know, for marketing, sponsorship deals, match day revenue, club museum, you name it. But I mean, I think with the club's branded image taking a serious hit with the latest scandal, big sponsorship deals could also be a challenge.
I was actually thinking about it when we were talking about this, you know, with Spotify going in to this club, investing in the stadium name with Spotify Camp Nou. I think Don Eliak, he must be a bit afraid of like what this will happen to also like Spotify's brand. Yeah. If Barca go through all these controversies and maybe will be less attractive for these big players than because I think Spotify's deal they signed for quite a few years.
Yeah, it must have been. I mean, those type of deals are never short. No. They're always long, especially stadium naming rights. I think those last for quite a while. I'm sure he wishes he rather bought Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Especially the way they're looking now. But I think it means like for the summer, Barca, they can pretty much only afford players whose contracts are expiring. So I think they've been linked with, you know, the likes of Gundogan, Inigo Martinez. So there's obviously huge problems at Barca. Luckily for them, the academy is producing top talents.
Exactly. La Masia is starting to produce these really big prospects because I felt there were a few years where La Masia, it came players that were quite all right. You know, they were like decent La Liga players, but none of them were like these star prospects.
Yeah.
But then Pedri and Gavi came up. And also like...
I think Pedri was bought from...
They took him from Las Palmas.
Yeah, Las Palmas.
Las Palmas. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then Gavi and Alejandro Balde.
I mean, Alejandro Balde. Yeah, yeah. That was the one also.
Those are two top talents. So they are producing, you know, good players still in the academy.
Definitely. But like, I think the players they are producing right now are on a different level than what they've
done
for quite a few years.
I mean, they had the, of course, that golden generation back in the day with Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, all those guys, Pique. And then there was a long gap, it felt like.
Yeah.
Barely any top players coming through.
Yeah, one of them are still part of this team and we talked about him previously. It's Sergio Roberto.
Yeah.
But he never became, you know, this star player, one of the best in the world.
He's not like Gavi.
Nah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Gavi and Pedri, they have the potential to be Ballon d'Or winner.
They both won like, the, what's it called, Golden Boy Award.
Yeah, the Golden Boy Award. That doesn't have to mean anything, but still, it shows that they are like producing hot prospects again.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's been some problems still with Gavi and his contract that he's currently playing under.
Yeah, there has. It's a messy situation, actually. Like basically, when he signed his contract extension in September 2022, he signed it until 2026.
So like roughly 5 years.
Yeah, or four.
Yeah.
He was actually still registered as an academy player. And this new deal included a clause that would allow him to leave as a free agent if Barca had not registered him as a first team player by June 30th, 2023.
Okay.
And they're only able to change the status to a first team player during a transfer window.
Yeah.
They can't do it outside the transfer window. So by late January, they hadn't done so yet, with La Liga saying they couldn't do it because of the salary limit issue. So then before the January transfer window closed, Barca decided to seek legal ruling. And they did this behind La Liga's back without La Liga knowing.
This is so strange.
Okay. Yeah, man, there's a lot of strange shit going on. Basically to force La Liga to register him as a first team player. And according to the court documents, when Barca presented their case, Barca said that La Liga's decision to reject Gavi's registration was part of a harassment campaign against the club.
Also feels like a Donald Trump way to put it.
Really odd one, some of the shit they say. Barca were actually successful in this.
Okay.
On January 31st, the last day of the window, a Barcelona court forced La Liga to register Gavi as a first team player. And they gave Barca 20 working days to file a separate case where the permanent resolution over Gavi's status would be reached.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Barca submitted this on March 2nd, and La Liga challenged the submission, saying that they missed the deadline by a day.
Yeah.
And then on Monday last week, Monday the 13th of March, the court ruled in La Liga's favor, stating that Barca did in fact miss the deadline by a day, and then they gave La Liga 5 days to respond on making a final decision on whether Gavi's registration would go back to his old status of an academy player, or he'd be a first team player. But if that happens, if it goes back to being an academy player, then the clause which would allow him to leave on a free in the summer would also come into effect.
Yeah, so he can go as a free transfer this summer though.
If they don't sort the stuff out, and I don't know how likely it's looking. He's a Barca academy product, so maybe he wouldn't want to. But I mean, if he can't be registered as a first team player, then...
Nah, exactly. Of course, he wants to earn those big bucks. He's a crazy talent, yeah, crazy prospect.
One of the best young players in the world.
So definitely, if, like maybe clubs like Bayern Munich, Manchester City, PSG...
Any top club will be after him, I think.
Yeah, exactly. If they come and they show him the money, and that he can also gain a different experience, why shouldn't he? Because Barca is not on like top level right now. There are a few other really big clubs that are above Barcelona right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you go, for example, and play in Manchester City, it would be crazy. You know, also to play under Pep Guardiola. I can imagine him, you know, growing up in the Barcelona academy system. He must have idolized Pep for quite a few years. There's been some rumors about, you know, Gündogan leaving City. Definitely think that Gavi would be the perfect replacement.
Yeah, he'd fit in like a glove in City.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see that as impossible.
On a free as well. Imagine getting Gavi on a free.
Yeah, exactly. And also they've been like, you know, Manchester United, they've been linked with De Jong. Bellingham is on the market this summer. Mm. And it would definitely be a few clubs that will miss either of these big prospects. Then if Gavi is on the market, there will be quite a few clubs that will try to take him.
Let's hope he is. I hope he is.
He would be crazy in United.
Yeah, he'd be insane.
Crazy.
Mad. But obviously, because of all this, there's so much tension between Laporta and Tebas.
I can imagine.
You know, the Barca and La Liga presidents. And actually, Tebas, before the charges were official, he said, "If Laporta does not justify properly or in a more reasonable way what has occurred, I believe he should resign."
Okay. I can feel the tension here. Yeah. Like these quotes. They feel so harsh. They're definitely not friends.
Not at all. Laporta, last week at some Barcelona event, he said,
"Okay.
We have been advised that Tebas was promoting a campaign against Barcelona and myself as a president. Now he's shown his true colors. He's obsessed with Barcelona and has some sort of phobia with our club. He can't forgive us for rejecting his CVC deal. He can't deal either with the fact that we are backing Super League. His aim is to control Barcelona from a distance, but he can't do that with me in charge."
Wow.
There's some pretty strong words.
Yeah, and these quotations, it felt like, are they for real?
They seem like they're from some fiction story.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Because it's like, for me, I work within PR, and in a PR perspective, this is terrible, terrible quotation.
He's not giving the best PR advice.
This man is looking like a clown. You should instead explain why. Why is this happening, and how did this whole thing come up? Explain the whole deal with this referee. Crazy situation in Barcelona.
A lot of mad shit happening there. The refereeing scandal, the financial problems, and this Gavi situation. And also who knows, like maybe there's more that we didn't even know of.
Definitely, for sure there is. And also like this open fight between the Federation in Spain and Barcelona.
Mad.
But when we're actually talking about these crazy press conferences, we are actually now leaving Spain. We don't speak about Spanish football that much. Maybe if any of you listeners feel like we should talk more about Spanish football, feel free to hit us up with the topics and so on, because I think it was really interesting to dig a bit deeper into Barcelona's what's going on there.
For sure.
So we're always interested to learn more what's going on in the football world. So if we have any La Liga fans out there, please hit us up with what we should talk about.
Please do.
But now we're actually jumping on to the Premier League. And as I said, talking about this
emotional...
Yeah, and crazy quotations, you know, strange relationships with like media and strange strategies to like express themselves while talking to media. We have to talk about Tottenham Hotspur's coach Antonio Conte, because I follow Italian football. I've always liked Conte the way he is. He's as a player, I remember him as a player. Mm. I was a bit too young when he played, but you heard so much about him that he played with his heart upon his sleeve. It feels like the same way when he's coaching, you know, when his teams are scoring goals, he's going crazy.
The celebrations are insane.
Yeah. He never holds in with his emotions.
No, he doesn't at all.
It feels like he says whatever you want to, basically.
Mm.
But now it feels like after they didn't win against Nottingham Forest.
Southampton. Southampton came back late.
Yeah. So it was 3-3.
Spurs are winning 3-1 with like 10 minutes left, and then Southampton scored two late goals to make it 3-3.
And after that, it was a disaster, of course, because Southampton being bottom of the league. Tottenham, even though their form has been quite poor, they're still in quite a good position league-wise.
Yeah, they're like fourth.
Yeah, exactly. So that they showed such a terrible performance in an important game like this, it felt quite crazy. And I didn't think it could be crazier than that. But the press conference we saw there, I'm going to say that I think you agree here, but that was one of the craziest ones I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
It felt like this guy, he wanted to get sacked. It felt like he was trying to provoke the press and also
it felt like
the board of the club.
It looked like he kind of knew his time as Spurs is over soon, and he wouldn't mind it happening a couple of weeks early.
Exactly.
I think the main quote from there was, "They're used to it here. Don't play for something important. They don't want to play under pressure or under stress. Tottenham's story is this. 20 years there's the owner and they've never won something. Why?
I started to think about the quotation that Chiellini did. You remember it? It's the history of the Tottenham. Do you remember it? It feels like that same quotation, but like it's crazy to say this about your
employer.
To your employer. You know,
imagine us doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. And I also read like after this, there'd been like some skepticism from the players. And I can understand that.
Of course. If the relationship's broken.
Yeah, exactly. If the coach says
beyond repair.
Yeah. You will never die for that coach.
Nah, not at all. He looks like a man who's given up on his players, his relationship with the club, finishing fourth. And just in general, the idea that he's the man to take Tottenham to the next level.
Yeah. I think he's longing back to Italy.
Yeah,
I think he wants to take Inter again. That is the biggest rumors.
I wouldn't be surprised. No. But never seen a manager talk about his own players like that. Like I think he called the squad selfish and he said they only want to play for themselves and he didn't take any responsibility of what's gone wrong. And he said on three previous occasions he's tried to hide this whole situation, but he couldn't pretend any longer. It all came out.
Wow. But I also feel like this is something that he's been feeling inside of him.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah. I mean, like, and then on this press conference, he couldn't hold it anymore. In some way, actually, even though I'm criticizing the way he's handling this, but I can also understand him. He's a human being.
Yeah.
He's really disappointed. I can imagine that he's pissed with how the whole team is performing and what attitude they're showing. And maybe like 5 or 10 minutes of the game, he has to sit and talk to the media. And then they're maybe trying to provoke him also in the way that they ask questions. And all of a sudden, it just feels like he just let go. Yeah, I think he lost the control here.
Yeah, he did. Who knows? Maybe it was calculated.
Yeah, I think that it can be in that way. But I can also see here that it was just like a manager being so annoyed and tired of his team letting him down. He's used to coaching top, top, top teams.
Yeah, he is.
And Tottenham, with all due respect to any Tottenham fans listening, Tottenham are not on that level. They don't have the winning culture.
Not at all. I mean, they haven't won a trophy yet in 20 years, 15 years.
Exactly. He's been previously in Inter, Juventus, Chelsea, clubs that belong up there and that should win titles every single season.
Spurs want to be that and they're hoping he would be the guy who take them there.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's definitely not going to be there next season. They should probably let go of him soon. Yeah. But maybe he also hopes it so he can get severance.
Yeah, but also like there have been some really big managers there who actually failed to do that. So he's not alone in this.
That's actually what I'm thinking, what his logic could be in this. He knows his contract's up soon. He has 10 games left at most. And he needs to paint his time at Spurs as a success in difficult conditions. That's why I think he described Spurs finishing fourth last season like a miracle. And by making his own players sound unmanageable and by linking himself to struggles of previous Spurs managers like Mourinho and Pochettino, he paints himself as another victim of a dysfunctional club.
Yeah.
Right? So he can kind of tie himself to those same issues that led Mourinho and Pochettino to leave. This is Spurs. This is a dysfunctional club.
Yeah.
That's not my issue.
Exactly.
So I think that could be kind of his logic.
Yeah, he's trying to let go of his responsibility and all this.
Yeah, he's taking no blame himself at all.
It's also because of him, of course. He could definitely have done things differently. But he's a very demanding manager, you know.
Yeah.
He wants players to do X, Y, Z. He wants to play X, Y, Z formation. He wants them to run in different ways, X, Y, Z.
He doesn't allow for a lot of flexibility and creativity.
I also feel like maybe he lost the dressing room now. And then he was just like so pissed so he didn't give a damn anymore.
Yeah, I think so. He's doing it when there's a 15-day break as well, right? There's no training tomorrow.
Exactly.
With international break coming up. So he doesn't have to face the players.
So if they're going to let go of him, they can definitely do that. There's already been links that Ryan Mason will go on as a caretaker manager again.
He was caretaker after, who was it again? Poch?
Mourinho.
Yeah, after Mourinho, though.
So he's the under-23 coach. He's always the guy calling to take over. And then he gets a hope that he will stay for a few months and then they take in someone else.
I wonder who they would take next, though.
Exactly. That was also what I was thinking.
Maybe Pochettino back. Let's talk about that, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that's the best option. The best option, I think you know who I'm thinking about.
Who?
Thomas Tuchel, a favorite for me. What a top-class manager that is.
I agree on that one.
One of the best coaches in the world.
Yeah, he is, honestly.
He's crazy.
He's a likable guy as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love him. I love him as a person. I also love his way of playing football.
And he's been out of work since, was it August or September?
Yeah,
September 6th or something.
Yeah, he's probably around London.
He's probably living there.
Yeah, it feels like he's interested in taking over another Premier League club. I think he could be the manager that would maybe take Tottenham to the next level. Both Mourinho and Conte, they're very like special persons. They wanted their own way.
The special one.
Yeah, exactly. The special one.
Self-proclaimed.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that Thomas Tuchel is also like hardworking coach that will never blame the players. It didn't feel like that, at least. Like
he takes all the blame on himself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think it could be interesting to have him there.
He'd be a great appointment, I think.
If as I long was a Spurs supporter, I would hope for Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, we will actually move on. Now it's not Premier League that we're going to talk about. This is the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Because the semi-finals we're playing.
And quarterfinal.
Quarterfinal. Yeah. True. And it was actually Fulham, the success team this season. season in the Premier League.
Probably the biggest surprise.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
They've been a yo-yo club, gone up and down, but now they're actually looking solid and could even get European spot.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Mm. Like, it was like 10 years ago when they were out last time, you know, with all these Clint Dempsey, Dixon Etuhu, former AIK player.
Yeah. I was on trial there that year.
You were. Yeah, true. Yeah, true.
Dempsey was still there, Mark Schwarzer and so on.
Yeah. And also Patrick Roberts in the academy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now in Sunderland.
They actually looked really good yesterday.
They were facing Manchester United, we have to say that.
Give some context.
They were facing Manchester United on Old Trafford, and the result actually ended up being 3-1, but it was quite an even game until everything happened, basically.
I say Fulham were even on top. They were the better side.
Yeah, they were having some great chances. De Gea
kept us in it.
Yeah, exactly. De Gea had some great saves. Yeah. For example, I think Willian had a crazy shot that actually De Gea took.
It was a header from Mitrovic as well.
Yeah, exactly. A really good one from Mitrovic too.
He kept us in it. They were on top, but then one of the craziest couple minutes I've seen, especially at this level, you don't really see that happening.
But I think we should give some context first, because I think that the change that Erik ten Hag made when he took in Antony, he had a great impact on the game. I think United started to look dangerous when he came on.
I feel like we always do. A lot of fans are frustrated with Antony, but I always think the team plays really well when he's on the pitch. Even though maybe sometimes he's one-dimensional, makes some strange decisions, the team just looks so much better when he's on.
Yeah. I think that in football, you have to have some players that do stupid stuff sometimes here and there. Because as a football fan, you get quite frustrated when you see a player of his skill miss a ball like that. But it's also like part of him threatening the opposition all the time.
That's the thing. You know, trying things.
Yeah. In a football team, you'll definitely have players that you expect that they will never fail. Every pass will be to the teammates.
You don't want your wingers to be like that.
No, exactly. You have to have wingers that takes risks. And by taking risks, is sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. And for him, he loses quite many times, some games. But also when he goes past his defender and threatens the goalkeeper, he's always dangerous.
Yeah, he is.
It's a counterattack when he took the ball and then he passed it on to Gianno Sancho. Mm. And then he went past the goalkeeper. Then he finished it. And it was Willian who it was a handball.
Yeah, it was clear.
It was a clear handball. I didn't see it at first though.
I thought it could have been his body.
Yeah, or it could be like handball, but against his body. Yeah. But then on the VAR, you definitely saw that there were a red card. Then Willian, he got the red card. And when the referee decided to do that, Marco Silva, the success coach of Fulham, he was so pissed. So he got a red card. And then while the referee was going towards Willian, giving him the red card, Fulham's star striker, Alexander Mitrovic, approaches the referee. And he's like punching him and, you know, being in his face, screaming, acting very like strange.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, very aggressive in a way that you don't see on this level in football.
See that on Sunday League.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You see that Corpen.
Yeah, exactly. we played the Sunday League game this autumn and then this was happening, but that's Sunday League. That can happen sometimes that some stupid ass person do that. But to see this on this level for these like well-paid pros, world stars and so on that they do this, it blew my mind to see it actually. I was like so shocked. I was cooking while having this game on. I had to finish off everything that I did and just like watching. I was like, is this happening for real?
Yeah. He has to get a long ban for that, I think.
Yeah. Sometimes if you get a really like rough red card, you get the 3 games.
Straight red for like these type of things, dissent is always 3.
Yeah, so it should definitely be 3 times that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets like an 8-match ban or something. I think also it kind of discourages people from wanting to be referees as well. The commentator, as I was watching the game, they were saying in England, especially for Sunday League and so on, they have such a hard time getting refs. And when these type of things happen, like you understand also why people maybe don't want to be refs.
It feels like you're a target and you don't put your life in risk. Like it's not in that way, but it's like, it's not that fun to be approached like that. You're there to do your job. Yeah. Fulham, they didn't follow the rules.
No, they didn't.
And he was just saying what everyone saw. Just dictating that. And then all of a sudden you get like a approach like that, being punched and so on. So
shame for Fulham. I mean, they look good. They would have been going to Wembley for the first time. And actually, they go to Wembley all the time since they're always in the Championship playoff.
Oh, true.
They would have been going.
They're used to that.
Yeah. So
they don't want to go that hard.
Yeah. It was crazy because Fulham got 3 red cards, 2 players, and there were 2 United goals all within the space of 5 minutes. Crazy couple of minutes.
Interesting for United.
Wembley again, another Wembley appearance.
Yeah.
We'll probably play City in the final if United beat Brighton and City beat Sheffield.
Okay, Sheffield United. Yeah, they're doing all right in the championship, but City should win that one for sure. But Brighton is quite a hard one.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one.
The Zerbi as the coach there, and they're doing great things. And now Justin Ayari, the AIK prospect, he made his debut this weekend.
Oh, he did?
So watch out for those international listeners that don't know about this guy. I think he can be the future of Sweden's midfield.
If Brighton sign you, then you know you're a decent prospect because their scouting is insane.
So. Yeah, definitely. And then he bought him directly from Allsvenskan. That's quite rare.
Yeah,
that's I think he will be a Premier League player
Let's see.
In maybe a year or so.
Vamos a ver.
Yes. But now we should talk a little bit about the team who leads this league and this Arsenal, and they continue their winning streak against Crystal Palace.
4-1.
Yeah, 4-1, exactly. Bukayo Saka.
2 goals,
yeah,
and assist.
Yeah, exactly. And Leandro Trossard continues making assists to Xhaka's goal.
He's been an incredible signing. Good for Arsenal that the Mudryk thing didn't work out. This guy, he can play everywhere. I mean, he's played wing back for Brighton. He can play anywhere across the front, left, right, center. Yeah. He can play as a striker, and he's just so dynamic.
Yeah, also like so Premier League proven.
Yeah, he is.
Because you've seen now that Mudryk, he's been struggling.
Big time.
Yeah, he's been struggling to adapt to Premier League football.
He doesn't start for Chelsea anymore.
No, exactly. And he shouldn't because he's not ready. He's not there yet. He can maybe come to that level one day, but he's definitely not there right now. And that is not what Arsenal needed. They needed someone who could go in and perform from day one. That's what Trossard has been doing.
And he could be the key thing in them winning the Premier League, because a lot of the other attackers were kind of looking a bit tired. Martinelli was looking tired. He got a little bit of a break with Trossard playing. Saka, of course, has always been on top. But I think that signing is looking like a masterstroke.
Definitely. Definitely. And as you said, I think that can be the difference between them getting the league title and not getting it. But I think we should mention also that Crystal Palace, they didn't succeed even though they had a managerial change where the former legend player, Patrick Vieira, left as a manager. What are your opinion about that?
He did great last season and even the beginning of this season as a Palace manager, but Palace hadn't won in the Premier League for like 2.5 months. And now they've actually been dragged into the relegation battle. There's 4 points between 20th and 12th.
Yeah.
Palace at 12th.
So I can understand
that. And the 20th.
Yeah, I can see that Palace were a bit nervous. Even though if you look at the table, you'd be like, okay, they're on the 12th place. That's all right for a club like Crystal Palace. But if you see the points, if they continue to lose games, they can be in a really bad position.
Insane how close it is. 4 points.
That's crazy.
In one game week, the bottom half of the Premier League can look completely different.
Definitely.
So which is exciting. I mean, normally relegation battles aren't that exciting.
Nah.
But this year,
I think it really shows why Premier League is so attractive to watch, because every game is so important.
Right.
That's super interesting.
There's a title race. There's a top four fight.
Yeah.
There's a relegation battle.
Yeah. Interesting to see who will take over Crystal Palace then.
Yeah.
And also interesting to see where Vieira will go next, because I think his next step is a bit uncertain, because I felt like he did quite a ride in Crystal Palace for quite some time.
Yeah, he did. It was only the last like 3 months. It's been
It feels like every time a Premier League coach gets sacked from their job, I'm saying that maybe they can take over the US. But but the US men's national team, he's been a coach in New York City. He was there for quite a few years. I think that...
Yeah, maybe he could. Apparently Henri wants that job as well.
Yeah, but then I think Vieira is 100% a better option. Sure. Henri has shown nothing as a coach. Of course, their dream name is the biggest American coach out there right now, Jesse March. I think that's a dream name, but I think that Patrick Vieira is even a better coach than Jesse March. Or arguably, they're at least like on the same level compared to Henri. Henri would only be like, because he was a good footballer.
Yeah, true.
And that he got some connections to this Balogun guy, you know, the Arsenal loanee who's in Rams.
The guy who's like top scorer. And
yeah, exactly. He's born in the US. Southgate didn't pick him for England.
Really?
Yeah. And I think he posted something on his Instagram. I saw something about it that he was like, only go with the people who believes in you or something.
I think I saw that as well.
Yeah, a bit cryptical. And the US men's national team fans, they think it's because he's thinking about choosing to play on national level for the US. And that'd be crazy because he's a great prospect.
And top scorer in a league which has Neymar, Messi and Mbappe.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty insane. An Arsenal low knee.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Mad.
So interesting to see where his future stands. And also another guy who I'm really interested on future-wise is Erling Braut Haaland, the Norwegian monster, and how his career will continue, because this guy, he just keep on smashing in goals.
Ridiculous. 8 goals in his last 2 games.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in both those games, he played 60 minutes. So I think it's like in 120 minutes, he scored like 8 goals.
This guy, I don't know what that guy is eating.
Lasagna. Like. I think his dad makes him lasagna the day before every game.
Is it that way?
Yeah.
Damn, that's why he's so big then.
And there are a lot of people in Norway have been wanting the recipe for this lasagna.
Okay, yeah. They should give it to all the youth players to become Erling Braut one day.
Mad.
But he's crazy. And we talked about this previously because some people said like, okay, but the goals he's scoring, it's not like they're the most beautiful ones, but he's always where he should be. He's like an Inzaghi type in that way. You know, Inzaghi was always the former Italian player.
Yeah.
He was always like, you know, standing on the right spot. He was not always like the best player in the game. But the game, what you should do is to score goals.
Yeah.
And
that's a simple rule of football. Team who scores most goals wins.
Right. Exactly.
And he scores goals.
Exactly. Crazy player. We just had to mention that.
In the Leipzig game where he scored 5 in the Champions League, one was a penalty and 4 were rebounds.
Yeah. Right. That's also the thing, that it's not a coincidence that he's so well positioned when it comes to rebounds.
He's always there. He has a sense of where the ball's going to bounce.
Yeah. Crazy.
Mad. 42 goals this season.
already.
42. Oof. And it's mid-March, so a lot of games to go.
That man is a monster. The only thing that can stop him is himself or his injuries.
And it doesn't seem like it'll be himself because he's got a beast mentality.
Yeah, definitely.
So if
definitely.
There's anything, it's injuries.
And talking about injuries and someone who's actually back from injury, because now we'll move on from the Premier League and go in a bit to the beloved Serie A. Also one of Erling Braut's biggest role models, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, made his comeback as a starting player for Milan this weekend against Udinese away.
He's been out for a while, yeah? End of last season?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's almost a year.
Yeah, almost a year. He was starting this game. It didn't look well at all. I don't think he's ready at all to like play, if we're being honest. But he scored his penalty, but he missed the first one. And then one Udinese player ran into the penalty area before Zlatan was finished with his penalty. So the VAR decision was that he had to take the penalty again.
Yeah.
And then he scored the second one.
Oh, yeah.
So now he's the oldest goal scorer in the Serie A.
He's 41 now? Or what is
he's turning 42 in September.
Damn.
So he's over 41. So I don't think anyone in his age has been on his level. He's not what he used to be, of course, but he's still like a decisive player when he's like injury free for a big club like Milan. It's quite crazy.
Yeah, 41 years old. That's mad.
Yeah.
Is that Japanese guy? You know, the guy who's like 55 or something?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's crazy.
That's mad. I don't know if it's 55, but 50 something.
Yeah, I think he's like 55. I think he's born like the same year as my father, 1967.
Is he?
Yeah, I think he's born the same year.
Yeah, he is. Kazuyoshi Miura.
Yeah, he's playing in the second tier of Japanese football or something.
Born February 26th, 1967.
That's crazy. That's crazy. He's even older than my father. Because my father is born like December 67.
Duh.
It's crazy to think that there is like an active footballer in a league like playing on a top level.
Impressive Giza.
Definitely. And talk about impressive. Napoli continues to win 4-0 against Torino away. Osimhen scored twice and Kvaratskhelia scored once. They're always scoring and performing super well for Napoli. So I think the title is for them to take.
Yeah, no question. I mean, obviously almost 20 points ahead now. And they actually have a pretty good chance of reaching the Champions League final as well. Or even winning it. They ended up on the easy side of the draw.
Yeah.
One must say. Napoli are playing against Milan.
Oh, true.
In the quarterfinal. And the winner of that game will play against Benfica or Inter. So they say Napoli beat Milan and then maybe they play
Inter
in the semifinal.
Yeah.
It's a quite easy route to the final.
It's still like hard games.
It's still hard games, but I mean...
But it's like the oppositions also that he know.
It's hard games, but you'd rather meet Milan, Benfica, or Inter than the teams on the other side of the draw, which are Real, Chelsea, City, and Bayern. Really? It is the easy side.
Definitely. If you have to choose one side, I would definitely take that one.
Yeah. Could be an historic season for them.
Definitely.
The first Serie A title in I don't know how long, and a Champions League win. Because once you're in the final, even though the team they'll be playing would be obviously the bigger team, but I mean, they're looking amazing this season, so they can beat anyone on their day.
Definitely. Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen, they can win a game themselves.
Could be a special year in Naples.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure.
And there was also two of the biggest games in Italy, actually. There were Inter-Juventus and Lazio-Roma. So Derby d'Italia and Derby della Capitale. If we start off with Derby d'Italia, Inter, they were playing at San Siro, and Juventus actually won that game, playing away from home. After quite a controversy when Adrian Rabiot, he took down the ball, it looked like on the VAR pictures that it was a handball when he took down the ball, but actually let the goal stay. Then he took it down and it touched his hand. It looked like that, at least on the VAR, but they said that the goal should be allowed anyways.
Then
he progressed with the ball, played it out to Filip Kostic, the left wing back, former Eintracht Frankfurt player, and he scored quite a good shot who Onana couldn't take, and they won. So Juventus, their form has been quite impressive.
Yeah, pretty good. Like, they still have a chance for top four.
Yeah, exactly.
Even with that 15-point deduction.
Exactly. So if they would have those points back,
they'd be second, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're performing really well, because we did an episode where we talked about Juventus, all of the crazy things going on there. Yeah. Allegri looking poor, not the most exciting team, you know, when you looked at the squad that they were putting out on the field. But now they're starting to look really good.
Yeah, they are. Right? They're like 7 points off top four.
Yeah.
So that's achievable.
That's definitely doable.
In 11 games, they can make up 7 points.
Yeah, and you see how terrible Milan are, for example, right now. You never know if Milan is going to win an easy game or not. And then actually ending up with another game in Italy was Derby della Capitale, so the Roma derby. Lazio playing at home. Both of them play at Stadio Olimpico, but it was Lazio, it was their home team, facing Roma. And it was quite a crazy game, actually, because I think the referee set the standard quite early on in the game when he gave a yellow card in the 7th minute to Ibanez. Then in the 32nd minute, I think he gave the second yellow one to Ibanez. After that, it was like when he gave that yellow card so early on in the game, it felt like you give the opposition the possibility to mock you all the time, mock the referee, saying that this should be a free kick, blah, blah, blah. So he decides the game and how it's going to look. And this is a derby game. You should be able to set standards. There should be some hard tackles and so on. The standard that he put there was way too low.
Yeah.
That was quite poor. And it actually decided the game. So when Roma got Ibanez sent off in the 32nd minute, then it was hard for Roma to come back.
Yeah. And then, of course, 10 men.
And then Lazio scored. Matias Sakanji scored. So, quite poor for Roma. They were like in fifth place, and I think Lazio in third place.
Yeah, Lazio second now, I see.
Lazio's always like, if you don't like watch Serie A, you never think of Lazio as a peak team.
Yeah, you just think of the two Milan teams, Napoli and Juve, I feel.
Yeah, and maybe Roma sometimes. Yeah. Roma are a bit like, if you think about top six in the Premier League, you think about Tottenham.
Yeah.
It's the sixth one. I think Roma is the same. Maybe Lazio is the sixth team there that you think of.
Fair.
Yeah, but quite impressive then for sure. Lazio to win the game and also to see that they are actually on second place now.
Great season for Serie A in Europe.
Definitely.
Three Champions League quarterfinalists.
Yeah.
In the Europa League, I think Roma there as well.
Yeah, Roma there. Some great success for Italy. I think that's really fun.
That's good.
Hope that will continue in that way for the Italian teams.
I hope so too. Let's see.
Yeah. And now we're actually looking forward to, or not looking forward to, because the national break is not that fun. Well, actually, because, you know, it's been like so many games. So now it actually feels like quite a ride. There's a bit of a break. During international break, I don't care that much. I only care about Sweden. Mm. So now I am actually hyping a bit for Sweden playing facing Belgium on Friday on Friends Arena. And then it's Azerbaijan also at France Arena in a week.
Oh, sure.
Two quite interesting games.
Yeah.
First of all, on Friday. So it's a moving day for me. I'm moving to a new apartment. And then one of the first priorities is to put on the television so we can watch the Sweden game later on that evening.
It'll be cool to have you so close.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know that, we basically live like 1 minute away from each other. So maybe we can do more podcast on the spot, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe do these like proactive ones. That will also affect the podcast listeners in a positive way. So you guys should also be happy about it, all of you listeners. I think that was it for today, right?
Yeah.
Basically nothing more to say than that we love you, all of our listeners. We appreciate that you show us so much love. You're the ones that make us want to do this podcast.
Without question.
Yeah. We're doing this for you guys. And also for ourselves. We love it too.
Yeah, we love it. I mean.
Yeah. But take care. Until next time.
Bye, guys.